The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Breslow podcast presented by the Bastards of Boston Baseball. I am your host, Chris Felico, the Italian Stallion, joined by my co-hosts, Jeremy Schilling, the Irish Goodbye, and positive Terry Cushman.
Yeah, right.
Oh, I love the tagline, Terry.
Yeah, who put that there?
Yeah, I have no idea. wasn't me. All right. Guys, this was a game that looked like it was going to get ugly, but the Red Sox somehow find a way to basically jump on another National League team's bullpen, find a way to scratch a couple of runs in the end, win this game. What's your guys' thoughts? What's the vibes?
I mean, the vibes have to be high. I said on last night's show I was concerned that this would be a potential trap series with the Yankees coming up after a day off. And by the way, in Southern Florida's infinite wisdom, Marlins games are not on TV. Make it make sense. But so I go to extra innings and it's blacked out. So I had to listen to Will Fleming the whole night. Okay. So I listened to the game and Alcantara's dealing and I'm sitting there worried about a trap series. The Gasper hit kind of punches through that wall. And then from there, it seemed like the same old Red Sox. Down a run, they go down a run even after Mickey's big hit. They continue to find a way, and it's when they win, this is what it's like. Tonight, Siegler had a big hit. It's a different 4A player making a difference, and the pitching was outstanding. So, you know, we're going to get into it in a little more detail, but I don't know how vibes aren't high, man. This team keeps doing it.
Terry.
All right. I didn't think I was going to be doing this, but I'm going to solve everybody's blackout problem right now. Okay. This right here is called the Superbox Elite. It's a cable box in a way. The camera's backwards. It's basically a cable box, USDMI, somewhere right about here, hooks into your TV, and then you have an AC adapter. You get everything imaginable on TV as far as cable goes. All the sports packages, all the HBOs.
So no one should pay for cable, Terry? Is that what you're saying?
No one should pay for any cable or sports package. I can watch the Red Sox on NESN on this thing, channel 846. You can, but there's 20 designated channels in the MLB package area where you can watch every game too. And when you buy this box, you have everything. There's no monthly subscriptions. You just have it. You literally have it. There's not even a single upgrade on this thing. You can't, there's no add-ons. There's no nothing. You just have everything. And it does cost $300 to $400. And the only thing is you have to keep your streaming service. So if you're tired of blackouts, this is it. And we're not sponsored by these guys. I'm just doing you all a solid.
Now, does that $300 to $400 include your kickback from Superbox?
I just covered that. I wish if they want to talk to us, come get it. Rob Manfred would want to murder me for sharing that with the audience.
So now you said that you don't need you have to keep your subscription, but then how are you getting cable? Like, why would I not need cable then? I guess I'm not following.
So when you get it, you download 3 apps.
Okay.
And it has its own app store and you get them from the Superbox app store. And once you install those in there, you got them. You got every channel imaginable, like 1800 channels.
Got it. So it's like an illegal Fire Stick. Understood.
Sort of, but you buy them right on Amazon and Walmart.com. I'm not going to tell. Let's just say a cop actually told me about this. And I've had one ever since. So I don't pay for anything. So once you have the box, once you cough up the $300 or $400, you just have to keep your internet. And that's it. And the one kicker, the one and only kicker, it only works on the TV it's hooked up to. So you can't, like, every house, every TV in the house can't stream off of one box. You'd have to just unplug the HDMI, move it over to the other TV, and you're good. But anyway, so I haven't paid MLB a dime in like 3 years, and I never will again. No blackout. And I got the Apple TV games. I don't know if the Peacock games were on there, but if you just go to the MLB section, you still get the games. So I don't even get screwed in that regard.
So Terry, can I take your answer to Chris's question as vibes are low for you? What's your position on the team?
You know, I'm just kind of feeling it out, you know, just all right.
It's late August.
I drink Monster. I don't drink Kool-Aid. I'm not the Kool-Aid guy, but you know,
this is shocking.
Yeah. It's hard to believe that our three or four scrap heap guys are just killing it. You know, Gasper had a good night again. You know, we'll find out tomorrow on Trevor's story on what he's playing like crap right now. Like, there's literally no reason to bring him up, even if he was crushing it. And, you guys are talking shit as I give my takes, but that's cool. I'm good with it. But, you know, I guess it was a good start by Ranger. You got five innings out of him. He hasn't pitched more than five since June 26th. So, you know, it'd be nice to get some.
He gave you a chance to win tonight, Terry.
He did. That's fine. He did give us a chance. And I didn't expect Bayo. That's the crazy thing. You know, the Red Sox had base runners, leadoff base runners in like five or six of the innings. Couldn't get hardly any of them home except for in the eighth. Contreras had a crap game. Bayo actually had a rough outing, but the Red Sox win. You know, it's like.
Well, my next point was going to be Ranger Suarez, because, I mean, to your point, he was not super efficient. He gave us a chance to win. But that's kind of been the theme now with a couple of the Red Sox starters now for the last couple of outings here, where they're giving you enough. They're not giving up a ton of runs, but they're not going deep into games. I think he gave up a season-high four walks in today's game. He only had four strikeouts. What's your takeaway on Ranger Suarez? Not only just the start, but, you know, taking the sample size since he's come back from the injury, and then looking forward to closing out this season, and then obviously, you know, hopefully going to the playoffs. Because let's face it, he was supposed to, quote unquote, be our number two after we signed him, and he hasn't been the number two. I mean, he is right now because we don't have Crochet, but if you have Crochet, he's really your number three.
Well, I mean, look, tonight was a step in the right direction, in my opinion. Hasn't been the same since he last came off the disabled list, but these three or four inning outings that are killing the bullpen, especially at a time where the rest of the rotation's young and already over their previous innings high. So I'm not going to be overly critical. Five innings, one run is a step in the right direction and obviously set them up to win the game. As it were, Bayo was available today because he's likely going to be pitching in 5 days in the Yankees series, in a four-game set, which includes a doubleheader, so that he's going to pitch bulk innings in that series. And if he didn't pitch today, he'd essentially be skipping a start. So I thought he'd go longer, obviously, before the game, but as it were, they set it up for the back-end guys, and he had a shorter outing, especially because he really struggled in that second inning. But as far as Suarez goes, I don't know that he's starting a playoff game right now. For me, I'm going Toley, Gray, and a bullpen game for Bayo in a playoff series. Not to say that won't change over the course of the 30 or so games we have left to play before that series, especially if it's at Fenway, but he gave you enough tonight. And he's got a month to get back on track and get back to where he was before the disabled list trip.
Before you go, Terry, question, Jeremy. So, like, in a playoff series, you go totally great. It doesn't matter. Let's just say 1-2, you interchange them. Would you consider going Suarez on a very short rope? And if he doesn't look like he has it, just sticking Bayo in there at that point? Or are you dead set on Bayo in a bullpen game?
Well, that would kill Suarez's ability to throw bulk innings at some point in a fourth game. So I don't know that I would.
Well, in the wild card, it's only three games.
Okay, so in a wild card, yeah, then I wouldn't have a problem. But I don't know that I would love that in a longer series because you're going to need innings from somebody. I think you have enough there to pitch a Moran or somebody like that, or maybe a Crochet if he's back and has an inning to give, and then get the Bayo and keep Suarez for bulk innings if needed. But in a short series, you're right, like a likely Yankees series, if he has a good first and you can get a second out of him, fine. And kind of play it by an inning by inning basis with Bayo, the expected bulk guy in that third game. I that's the way I would go right now over giving Suarez the ball. Again, my hope is that he gets into September, he stretches out, he's back to throwing 85 to 95 pitches, and he can be that third guy because we saw what Bayo did in the last playoff series when he had pitched well in September, as he totally turtled. So my answer to that really quickly is my preference would be if he has his good fastball is to have him be in the seventh or eighth or ninth in a tie game and not to burn him in the first inning. And so
you're referencing Crochet just so for the listeners.
I'm sorry. So El Jefe asked, essentially paraphrasing, would you use Crochet as a starter for Bayo? My answer would be no. I would have him as a high leverage late inning arm.
Yeah, agreed. Terry, what's your take on Suarez tonight and then going forward?
Well, just super quick on Crochet. He said at some point last week he doesn't see himself pitching more than two innings per outing. So unless something changes, you know, we've got a very good bullpen as it is, but I mean, he could be your sixth and seventh guy to get it to Whitlock and Chapman or Miller and Chapman, however it goes. But so that's Crochet for now. As far as Ranger Suarez goes, I mean, if the playoffs started tomorrow, I'd probably go with Jeremy's plan, you know, Tolley or Gray game one or two. And then Bayo, you know, in front of a starter. And if you have Garrett Crochet, you can use an elite guy to pitch that one inning. You know, you can put Miller in there, you know, for the first inning. But that's how I would do it. However, Suarez will have some opportunities here over the next handful of weeks. They've all got five or six starts apiece. And one of the reasons Ranger Suarez was my first choice this offseason as far as starting pitching acquisitions is because he owns a 1.48 ERA in the month of October. And that's a pretty decent sample size. That's 42 and two-thirds innings.
Wow. Yeah.
Lights out when the pressure is on. And even when he doesn't look good, he looks good. You know, he just the traffic Wait, on Gary, the bases.
Your plan is to take the guy with a 1.55 ERA with 42 innings and not put him in the playoffs? That's what you're telling me?
No, I'm saying he would be my game three starter over Bayo.
Oh, okay. I thought you said start Bayo. I was like, that was not Jeremy's plan. All right.
No.
Sorry, I misheard.
I'm not going to drop the F-bomb for the third show in a row. But, you know, I'm a space cadet at times, and sometimes the mouth doesn't say what the brain says to say, and then voila. Charlie, apparently last night, according to the comment section on YouTube, kept calling the Giants Baltimore, by the way. You know, same color, basically.
I didn't pick up on that.
I didn't either, but the, you know. It's a grind. For everyone in the audience, it is a grind. We're doing this. We took most of July off thinking we were done, and here we are every night. But anyway, so I'm still a Ranger Suarez guy. I don't know why he's just so limited. Why is the leash so short on him? I mean, he's had a couple of minor injuries. He hasn't missed more than a few weeks at a time. I don't know what the deal is with Suarez, but
is the leash short, or is it a matter of, do you think it's their, like, his efficiency, like the concerns of the efficiency? Because I mean, they're taking him out at 90 plus pitches. He's not going to 100, but he's also doesn't have his stuff at a lot of times at that point in the game. So I think it might be a little bit of a mixture.
Yeah, I mean, he hit two guys tonight, you know, and he only throws 92, so I'm sure it didn't hurt. But you know, the control was off, and a couple of guys got on base for free. So I don't know. But I think we can rule out Patrick Sandoval. At this point, you know, stop signing anyone with the name Sandoval. Like, that's not going to go well. And, you know, and then who we got left? I'm missing one.
Jake Bennett.
Yeah. I think he's going to have Tommy John by then. But I'm kidding. I don't know. You know, me and Matt were, you know, playing patty cakes over crochet earlier. And this is the insane thing to me. And Juan pointed this out. I think this is his take, so I'm giving him credit. But, you know, we were talking about whether the crochet trade was good or bad and who won and who lost. And he was only supposed to miss one start. And then it turned into most of the rest of the season. But the crazy part, and I think this was Juan's take, Tarek Skubal had literal elbow surgery. Had it. And then come back, and he's pitching. He missed a month.
I can explain that.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Tarek Skubal seeking $500 million in about 90 days, and Crochet has been paid.
Well, he's pitching well, though. I mean, he's not. It's not a Cy Young type year, but
I think what Jeremy's point is that it's. I mean, there's a chance that, I mean, Garrett Crochet could come back and pitch well. The point is that. The willingness to risk it when the basically all the cards are on the table and there's $500 billion at stake, $500 billion obviously is an exaggeration, $500 million at stake for Tarek Skubal, and then Garrett Crochet's already been paid. So like, what's the point of risking it? Am I right, Jeremy?
Yeah, 100%.
Well, just 100%. The fact
if Skubal doesn't finish the season, or he comes back and he's ineffective. What he's seeking, which I think he said in the offseason was $500 million, becomes a one-year prove-it $35 million deal versus the long-term generational money that he is seeking and should get now that he's come back the way he has. And look, Tarek Skubal is a different monster. This guy's won back-to-back Cy Young. He is an elite competitor. And I'm not saying that Crochet is not a competitor, and I don't exactly know what's going on with his elbow and his oblique and all the other things, because the Red Sox lead the league in guys that go on a disabled list but stay on it for a different injury. So I don't have an explanation, but I have to believe the fact that Crochet's been paid is a factor in his inability to push back to play this year. I would think if Crochet was in the same situation, there's a chance he's already pitching.
Well, point. I mean, just the fact that he's physically able to come back and be an ace after a month is a freak thing. Like, yeah,
he had loose bodies in his elbow.
Yeah, but I mean, he could have taken 2.5 months and nobody would have said anything. He would have came back, been ready for the postseason, probably still got traded, you know. So, and, you know, if Crochet's sitting out because he got paid, I mean, optics, that's not good.
I don't think it is good. And now, if he comes back and he's himself in a condensed version and can give you 30 to 35 pitches spread out over two innings, if he's effective, I think that softens things a little bit, at least for me. But if he doesn't come back this year and pitch, I think there's going to be a lot of questions in the offseason about toughness, about, I mean, the Red Sox medical staff. And I think they might be warranted. We don't know. He's throwing on flat ground from 100 feet. So he's not ramped up.
Well, it's, It's interesting. We have Bump Munch Cookie in there who says, does this lack the team lack toughness, right? And I think there's a couple of people that are key faces in this organization that there's questions, right? Like we talked about Garrett Crochet. I think that's starting to potentially become a question. Obviously, Marcelo Meyer, who's no longer here, that was no doubt beyond a question. It was just a fact. And I think it's almost fact now with Roman Anthony at this point, right? And there might be some other faces I'm missing here, but those are pretty core players and faces for this team coming into the season. The nice thing is that we have people that have come in and adequately filled in their shoes above and beyond to this point. I mean, this team now has, what, 71, 72 wins without their ace, without one of the cornerstones of the franchise for the next 10, 15 years, even on the team anymore. And then the other one who was supposed to be a cornerstone, not even playing this whole season. And then a bunch of AAA players filling in. So I think it's gone above and beyond, but it's a fair question if this team does lack toughness.
I've got a take I've been dying to give, okay? And it has to do with Garrett Crochet. But before I get to him, go back to the last dynasty we had, Chris Sale, David Price. And I think this applies to Chris Sale more than David Price, but I just got the impression, and I'm speculating, both of them were just comfortable on the injured list. It was a safe place for them, you know, and there was, I forget which injury Sale was coming back from. I think it might've been one of the rib injuries. He missed a ton of time, 3 or 4 months. He comes back and on inning one takes a comebacker off the hand, breaks a finger, exits the game. And then at some point, I think in the third or fourth inning, he reemerges from the clubhouse and he's all smiles. He looked like he was so relieved. And I don't think it's a coincidence that he gets out of this insane market, goes to Atlanta, which is, you know, it's a big market, but it's a lot more lovey-dovey. You know, there's not a lot of pressure there. And he wins a Cy Young, his first ever. You know, so there's just something about Boston and the pressure and everything. And I don't know. I'm not saying Crochet is sitting out on purpose, and I'm not saying anybody sat out on purpose, but for some reason in Boston, if you're on the injured list, that's a very safe place.
I strongly would disagree and think that this team lacks toughness. I'd say it's the exact opposite. Guys like Durbin playing through a mangled finger. Contreras has been dealing with a whole bunch of things. The outfield hasn't missed any time. Say what you want about Duran's production, but he posts. He plays every day. Rafaela, we talked about it last night on the show. Despite the way he plays defense and the way he's willing to sacrifice to make plays that other people can't even get to, and Abreu plays every day. This team has been extremely durable, and the Meyer-Anthony-Crochet thing I think is getting a lot of the attention, but I don't think it turns this team into a soft team. I would say the exact opposite. The far majority of this roster posts and plays every day. Pitching issues are going to crop up, and pitching's a different monster because if you pitch through a strain in your forearm, you're 2 weeks away from a potential Tommy John issue. If you're going to pitch through an oblique, it's the same thing. You've got to be a little bit more careful with the intricacies of the pitching mechanics, but the team generally, I would say, is the exact opposite. This is a tough, likable team that we didn't like because they weren't winning. But once they started winning, and you've seen what guys, Contreras playing through a hamstring, Chapman, and I've been talked about that a number of times when he was critical of Anthony and Meyer before Meyer got traded. And Carrabba's came out and said he'd been pitching through a hamstring. Guy hasn't missed. And he's had nights where his stuff wasn't as good and clearly limited by something, yet he goes out and gets 3 outs. So I would say it's the exact opposite. I think this team is tough. And there's a few people that are soft that are getting a lot of attention, but it doesn't change what I think about the overall product and team.
I think the older players are showing the toughness right now. I think for the younger 20-somethings.
Terry, I don't know if I agree with that. Durbin might be the toughest guy on this team. He's in his 20s. I mean, the guy plays with mangled fingers.
Yeah, he's an exception for sure. But just generally speaking, Meyer's out with a foot injury right now. So now that's going to delay his.
He's not on the roster. Let's not talk about that. That guy is soft. And I'm not just talking about physically. I'm talking about mentally. He's just about as soft as any professional athlete I'm currently aware of. So, but he's not our problem anymore.
Whitlock, another guy, you know, maybe it's just bad genetics in his case, but
Slayton,
I don't know.
Constantly hurt.
Slayton,
I mean, he's got it, but it's a little bit different again with the pitching, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think I agree with you, Jeremy. I think what I was trying to convey before is that I think it's a fair question based off of the people or the faces going into the season that people thought we would be counting on, the Myers, Roman Anthony, and Crochet. It's a fair question from that standpoint, but I'm 100% in lockstep with you. The people that are here that are actually yielding the results, win or loss at this point, which is more winning than losing, we can't question their toughness. To your point, Terry, yes, there's definitely people within this organization, remove Meyer from it, you know, whether it's Garrett Crochet, Roman Anthony, Garrett Whitlock. And again, yeah, some of it might be genetics, but there's a fair enough sample size where you could say, all right, maybe you question their toughness. But to your point, Jeremy, for the people that are here stepping in and filling in the role, we can't question theirs. And there's a large enough sample size that we can't. Like, I've seen Seidon Rafaela land on his face, and you're like, oh, crap, this guy got to be concussed. Did he break a rib? He gets right back up. Will you or Bray, you run into things. Even Duran, I mean, yeah, mentally, I don't know if we could say how tough he is, but at least physically, there's been some things where you're like, all right, looks like he's quote-unquote at least hung in there.
He's a guy who could use an injury as an excuse, and he hasn't, because he's sucked for a large portion of the season.
100% fair. And before we get to the offense set, which will include Jaron Duran, because he was a big part of it, let's talk about real quick Eric Miller, because it seems like night in and night out when this guy comes in, high leverage situations, the guy's been absolute nails. I mean, tonight comes in, I want to say it was bases loaded, completely shuts the door, gives the Sox a chance, then the Sox end up rallying in the top of the ninth, taking the lead and don't look back. That guy, it's funny, I had heard somewhere, I don't know if it was an article, it might have been one of the other podcasts, might have been, who knows, might have been Kravis that said it, that initially the ask for him to the Red Sox was Meyer and Anthony, and people were laughing like, there's no way you give up those two. The way he's pitching right now, and this might be a little bit of a exaggeration, I may have done that damn trade with what he has given you, definitely Meyer, obviously, but with Roman Anthony giving us almost nothing to this point, I mean, it's been wild. And we have him under control for 3 years. What's your thoughts on Eric Miller and his performance thus far?
I was clear right from the beginning. I don't think Meyer is a big league player. And if you can get a guy with Miller's stuff, who is a confirmed big leaguer, I like the deal. I like the deal when it was made. I was over Meyer. I'm convinced he's not a big league player, and then all he does is get re-hurt for a different reason than why he went on the disabled list. You know, to me, anytime you trade a prospect, which is what Meyer was, for a proven big league commodity, I'm behind it. And his stuff is awesome. I believe that at some point he could be the closer once Chapman phases out, because he has the stuff and the pedigree to get big outs like we saw tonight.
Yeah, I mean, Jeremy just hit on it. You know, it wasn't necessarily a move for now. It was a move for when Chapman's no longer here. You know, Whitlock coming towards the end of, I think he's got one more year left, but again, the strike year. So you've got Miller for a couple of years. By the way, I mean, Miller, like, typically in the bullpen, that's a good name. You know, Mason Miller, Andrew Miller, Eric Miller. I'm just pointing it out. There's a history, you know, at least in Boston. But and I mean, he can be the eighth inning guy of the future. He could be the ninth inning guy. And I mean, this might be the best bullpen we've ever had. I mean, we've had some great eighth and ninth inning guys. You had Tozawa and Koji, Bard and Papelbon. Who did Kimbrel have? Matt Barnes, I guess.
Matt Barnes.
Yeah. I hated Barnes. Barnes kind of sucked a lot of the time. except for that one year. But yeah, so I mean, this one you can mix and match your eighth inning guy. I mean, or do we hate it if it's Guerrero?
No, I mean, to your point, you've got Guerrero, you've got Miller. If Whitlock comes back, it gives you anything. Throw in now Garrett Crochet if he's actually able to give you anything in a late inning spot, and then Chapman. If all is well heading into the playoffs, this will by far be the strongest bullpen that we've ever had.
Look, I'm confident with the bullpen for everybody not named Weiser. I will say it every time we talk about him. There's way too many unproductive pitches that are just yanking fastballs, spinning sliders that have no chance of being viewed as a strike by the hitter. And I don't trust him. I never have. I never will. But other than that, the bullpen, and look, one of the reasons why we've overcome Jake Bennett running into some problems where he can't get it late into the games, and Suarez, and on the days where Toley has maybe struggled with low efficiency, the bullpen is the reason why we keep with not the reason, is one of the big reasons that are in any time there's an explanation for sustained winning, the bullpen has to be a factor, and ours has been fantastic. So absent Weiser, I feel pretty good with the guys out there, especially if they're pitching on a day or two rest.
Agreed. I mean, it leads me to my next point, because the truth is, without the bullpen and everything they've brought thus far, it doesn't leave us in the position to be able to have these comeback wins, these rallies from the offense late in games, because even though the starters have given you enough, only giving up one or two runs and kind of just holding it down enough to turn it over to the bullpen, because they're not super efficient and effective right now from an inning standpoint, it's the bullpen that's basically taking that torch and then making sure that late in these games we're in a position to tie it up or win it late, in which we have. So, I mean, it's kudos and credit to everyone, but it does start with the bullpen, because they are taking the torch way too early in these games and holding down the fort. So kudos to them. But my next question then becomes, what's the thought on the offense? Because now it's, you know, pretty much it seemed like the whole San Francisco series, it was the same playbook, right? Like, just try and stay alive late enough in the game and then find late runs to win that series. And that's pretty much what happened in almost all three games. And then here we are against, again, another team that I think we would say that is inferior to the Red Sox in the National League. Seems like there was mostly Red Sox fans in the stands from what I overheard on the TV. Shocker. And the offense was pretty anemic. I mean, outside of Jaron Duran and Mickey Gasper in the beginning of this game, no one else came to play. And it's funny, I was waiting for that big moment from Jaron Duran, and then it looked like the big moment was going to be that error in the field, in which it looked like he made a great play to get the guy out at second. They challenge it, and he doesn't, and then the bullpen does their magic and gets somehow out of the situation. But obviously, then the offense rallies late. They score a couple of runs. All of our triple A leaguers just start, you know, scoring the runs late. So what's your thoughts on the offense? Is there any concern going forward?
Yeah, I don't believe it's sustainable in the playoffs. You got to hit homers in the playoffs. You just have to. But with regards to the balance of the regular season, and we'll see how it plays out, they didn't have runners on base. This team changed when Tracy took over and they stopped sitting around waiting for the three-run home run. And so what does that mean? It means bunts. It means hitting runs. It means double steals. It means safety squeezes. And the things that, frankly, the Rays do to manufacture runs, and a home run's basically gravy and extra and unexpected run support. But if you're not putting people on base, you can't go put pressure on defense. So they did late in the game, and they were able to string some hits together. So the offense has to be more efficient, essentially getting to first base with an athletic team that runs well. Multiple guys can steal a bag. Those that can go first to third, you know, and do those things that put pressure on the defense, because that's how this team has to score runs.
Before you say anything, Terry, you know, it's interesting to your point, Jeremy, because I agree with you 100%. This team has changed its dynamic and its approach for much of this success since July. What was interesting tonight is that first and second, you've got Seager up at the plate, and everyone expected a bunt, and he doesn't bunt. And he's up getting a strikeout. I think it was the seventh inning. Granted, later in the ninth inning, similar situation. We were expecting a bunt, no outs. He ends up ripping, you know, a single down that where it turned into a double or triple, but down the right field line, Eli White scores. And that was kind of uncharacteristic for the Sox, because the way we've been winning is getting those guys over into scoring position, third base, and then making sure that we secure those runs. It sort of was interesting. Sorry, go ahead, Terry.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of along the lines of where Jeremy is at. You know, I don't – pitching staff step up for some reason in the month of October in a big way. And, you know, you tend to see the offense kind of come down a little bit. But this year is one of those years where everyone's trash. I mean, who are you afraid of? I mean, you got the White Sox leading the Central, the Astros leading the West. I mean, I'd probably be afraid of Tampa, actually. I mean, that's probably my biggest fear. We'll see what New York looks like this weekend, you know, but I think this weekend will be representative of what an October matchup with them could look like. But yeah, but I just don't know if this cute scrappy offense really gets it done. But if there's a season to do it, it's this season. I hate this model. I hate what this team looks like. You know, I'd just rather have proven guys. I'd like to either sign in free agency, you know, the Wilson Contreras type guys. Just give me a solid veteran on a 3 or 4 year deal, even if you have to overpay. And we say this year after year. But though that's how I want to build the foundation here. I don't want to rely on those 4A guys. I just don't think that's sustainable in the long run. And I said in the war room earlier, yeah, 2021 was fun. We got 2 games from the World Series. But you know what? The front office and ownership thought that that was real life, that's what the Red Sox could be for the foreseeable future. And we, as fans and as podcasters, took it in the teeth. So, and then even last year, who cares? Who cares that we limped into the playoffs and won one game against the Yankees? Doesn't do anything for me. I'm not. That's a very forgettable postseason. And you know, I want to get back to maybe the days of the 04 teams, 07. 13, 18, maybe those days are just over. Maybe teams are just not going to build them that way anymore. And maybe I need to accept that. But yeah, I question it. But at the same time, who are we afraid of on the American League side? On the National League side, I don't want to play the Phillies. I don't want to play the Braves. I don't want to play the Dodgers. If the Padres get hot, I probably don't want to play them either. You know, so there's plenty to be afraid of on the other side, but you don't have to worry about it until the World Series.
Well, first of all, 2013, I don't know if we want to build anything like that. That was the most unsustainable World Series team possibly ever.
Well, hang on, though. So you're right. That was the one team that wasn't like the other three. But you still had your core. You still had a lot of guys from 07, you know, Pedroia, Ellsbury, Poppy, Lester,
no, agreed. In comparison to what we're at now, I don't disagree. I'm just saying, meaning it's an outlier versus the other ones, because it was not built off of this constant chasing and coming up short. Like the 18 team, 16, 17, they were close. They just weren't there. 13, we went from last place to literally winning the World Series right back to last place.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I like the core that we had. We had the homegrown core. And then when I said, you know, let's go get some Contreras type guys, some proven veterans, that's exactly what happened. Victorino, Napoli, you know, Johnny Gomes was more of a role player, but, you know, but that's how it was. And you just happened to have two of the most underrated postseason performers of the previous decade in Lester and Lackey. Go look at their postseason records through 2013. Both of them might have had just one or two losses apiece. Like, for some reason, they were big game pitchers. You know, they might have scuffled on a Wednesday night in June against Baltimore, but once October got here, they stepped up.
Yeah, they were different guys. I don't disagree, and it's funny because I'm somewhere between the two of you and your takes, because the offense, yeah, I agree. I don't think it's sustainable, although it's interesting because I think that if the Red Sox last year in game two of that Yankee series played the way that the Chad Tracy Red Sox play with the small ball, they may have won that game. They weren't doing that because the thing is the Yankees last year were so piss poor defensively that this crap might have worked to squeeze in a couple of runs, but we'll never know. The interesting part, though, is as I say that, the one team that I still am scared of, and it could be the fact that I just live in New York and I have to see the Yankees all the time and I'm sick of it, it's the New York Yankees, specifically if they're the home team, because like it or not, like as bad as they play defense, as dumb as they look sometimes in the strikeouts, if Judge is healthy, like you can guarantee these guys are going to run into home runs in the Bronx. They just do every year. They'll strike out a ton in those games, but like they're going to run into home runs. And if there's guys on base, it's going to be damage. And that still scares the crap out of me. So I don't think the offense is that sustainable. I'm not super concerned, but like I'm starting to get a little bit worried. Adley Rutschman again, another like ofer tonight, has looked completely lost at the plate. He's lucky that the rest of the team is in the midst of figuring it out and finding ways to get it done in the midst of him trying to figure things out, coming back from rehab. And maybe that's what it's going to be. I know the broadcast said that like, oh, you'll be able to count on him. And it's like, until I see it, I can't. Because, I mean, he played in Baltimore. He didn't play for Boston. And there's completely two different expectations in baseball markets right now and trajectories. So more to see there and more to come, I should say. So I think let's just close it out with, how do we think that the rest of the series is going to unfold? Who's even the starting pitchers?
It's going to be, I think, Tolley tomorrow and then Sonny Gray on Wednesday, and that is the case. No starter listed for Miami tomorrow, but, I mean, are we going to pick against Peyton Tolley? Probably not.
You're on mute, Jeremy.
For tonight, for me, I was again on last night's show, so we previewed this series. Tonight was the game I thought that you were most likely to lose, and then you go and find a way to win it. So I'm not saying that a sweep, but you really put yourself in a position to be in a really good spot going into that Yankees series. And if you can win another, at least one, two, you have a chance of going into that Yankees series two games out of overtaking them. And if you win that series 3-1, you're tied going into basically the last month of the season. So they've set themselves up by winning tonight. That was the tough game for me. So we'll see how it plays out, but they really have set themselves up here to have some serious momentum going into that Yankees series.
Barry?
Yeah, I don't think we're definitely going to win tomorrow, I would say. So that wins us the series. I don't know what to expect with Sonny Gray. I mean, he's solid and efficient, but I don't think he's quite the same as he was in the first half. And that kid he's pitching against, I covered it last night. On paper, I mean, 4.37 ERA doesn't look spectacular, but he has strung together several good starts in a row. So that could be the sneaky loss that happens. But I would probably still favor Gray regardless.
Yeah, I thought tonight was going to be the game that could do us in. And it was the type of game where, depending on the outcome, I thought it could even be a trap series and you lose 2 or 3. I agree with you, Terry, that I would figure that the other one, believe it or not, would probably be that Gray start because it's that much more unexpected. But now that we found another way, and what's a crazy stat they threw out today on the broadcast is that, I don't even know if you guys know this, but the Red Sox have scored the most ninth inning runs in the MLB with 69. I don't know if that includes the two that we got tonight, but that's wild. I did not know that we scored the most runs. And that's important because when it comes down to it, to be able to manufacture runs late in games, that's the kind of things that you need to see in October. Because they're tight games and every run matters. Granted, we're not doing it against every team that's going to be in October, we had a fair enough sample size in the middle of this run that we were playing first place teams that will be in October. So I think that's good. I think that we will win the series. I would expect a sweep, although I wouldn't be shocked if we split at this point. In other news before we close out, I don't know if you guys saw this, Roman Anthony might be coming up in the Yankee series. It was a rumor today.
Yeah, well, apparently tomorrow, so Tuesday, depending on when people listen, so that could be today for a lot of people, they'll make a decision on Story. That should be a quick no. He's not playing well down there. I mean, he's hitting like a .190.
Shocker.
And who thinks Monasterio should lose playing time? That's the easiest no ever.
Agreed.
And so having said that, they are going to decide on Thursday with Anthony and IKF. And IKF should be, even though he was hot before the injury, Sogard is the domino in that one. Do you want to take Sogard out of the lineup?
No, that's my guy.
Yeah. So really the only guy out of that three that should be coming up is Roman Anthony.
Agreed.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. And I mean, you know what? He's had some moments in the Bronx, so we'll see. I'm not expecting much when he first comes back. I'm sure it's going to take him some time, but more to come on that. You gentlemen have anything else?
Go Sox.
Fire Breslau.
All right. Well, you heard Terry. We've been the Fire Breslau podcast.